Welcome back, everyone, to Campfire Tales. Tonight's video is about a park ranger and his story about his second season working over at the Firewatch Tower and what he witnesses. Stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss this. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now, let's get spooky. My second season as a fire lookout was also my last, and very short-lived at that. The first I had spent on the border between two states, in a more populated area on the East Coast. A rookie post, they said. Too populated for my liking. I longed for a quieter, lonelier lookout where I could focus on myself and my downtime, where the night was full of silence and nature. Stars and not the distant glow of town lights like an artificial sunrise always threatening to break the night. No faint music, no laughter, without the risk of a stray bullet hitting the tower, when some city kid thought he was the original frontiersman. No. I got exactly what I wanted the second season for a brief time, with a hell of a lot more than I bargained for by its end. It was too quiet, too lonely and far, far too isolated. The next season, I managed to find a posting as remote as you could get, high up out in the Midwest. A 20-mile hike in from the nearest ranger station, inaccessible to both car and truck. Pack mules were the method of supply unless there was a helicopter available in the vicinity and the weather looked to be turning bad. I was excited. Dreams of quiet introspection and nights full of writing by lamplight lay ahead of me. What I would give now to just have stayed at the first summer's lower tower again. Not that couple of days that put an end to my career and left me so I couldn't bear to be in the woods near dark these days and make sure never to stray far from the well-beaten trails. On the plus side, my writing career is looking good. Inspiration is no longer hard to find. When I estimated I couldn't be more than a few turns from the ranger station the day before my watch started, I rounded a final sharp corner in the already dry and hard road and saw the welcoming lights of the cabin, a rather small log construction. Picturesque if not for the overgrown lawn and flower beds about it. The roots of big, well-established trees lined the edge of the dirt road, creeping in the sides of the packed earth, threatening to wreck the tires or suspension of anybody's whose mind drifted off for a second too long. It was hard to see them with the nighttime fog littering in and around the woods. The atmosphere it created was excellent, and I stored the mental image in the back of my mind for later. It gave me chills even though the night was unusually hot and stuffy. The air smelled of rain soon to fall, and the hairs on the back of my neck were picking up on the static energy that was likely a sign of an incoming thunderstorm. It was a much higher altitude than what I was used to where I had lived on the east of the country. My old co-workers had given me a heads up. Weather worked differently in these mountains. Hot days and cold nights at altitude were a beast all unto themselves, often ending in a bang where two weather fronts collided. I hadn't expected much activity when I arrived so late in the evening, but there was a group of law enforcement vehicles and a few more park staff trucks than the cabin was ever designed to accommodate. They turned when my high beams washed over them, and one of both the park staff and police officers detached from the group to see who was intruding at such a late hour. They both wore grim expressions, made more pronounced by the low-angled light from my truck. It wasn't until I killed the engine that I was able to appreciate just how dark it was. A single floodlight on the corner of the cabin backlit the group and made them seem far taller and more dangerous than they probably were. Like something from a horror movie set designer's wet dream. Low lying, cold fog swirling just above their knees, as two approaching stop just out of reach of the sweep of my door opening. The fog trailed into the clearing behind me, caught in the current of the drought my truck had pulled behind it. The smell of the police officer's cigarette hit me, and for a brief second, the fog and the cigarette smoke had blown out into the air, seeming to be one and the same. "I'm Ben Owen," I introduced myself. "I'm taking the North Lookout for the summer." The police officer shrugged, uninterested, obviously waiting for somebody else.
"Let me know when the hunter guy gets here,"
he said, turning back to the group.
"They never gave me a name, but he's due soon."
The park ranger improved more welcoming by hair.
"Come on then," he signed.
I noticed a shiver as he scanned the darkness I had come from.
"It's a cold night, not one to be out for long."
I tried to get some information about what was happening from him, but he proved tight-lipped and uncooperative, not willing to let the fire look out he would most likely only meet once in on the secret. He said that he wasn't at liberty to share anything with me, showed me a bunk in the cabin, and bid me a
night then.
Tired and with a long hike before me, I hit the sack, literally. There was only a thin mattress on the bunk, and I had to go back for my sleeping bag. It had been a long trip, and I spent a while listening to the sounds of the ranger and officers milling about before I heard a loud truck pull up. There was some upset by the looks of it, and eventually it grew quiet. A little while after, I heard the door of the bunkhouse open for a moment. Quiet, slow breathing entered without a sound. I never heard a movement until whoever it was laid on the mattress, and a few old-sounding springs popped and squeaked as they settled in the bunk furthest from me. I ignored it, feigning sleep, and once I heard the slow, rhythmic breath of someone in a deep sleep, I soon joined them until the morning light woke me, far later than I had planned to start. I rose, still dressed in the same clothes from the day before, and made my way to the outhouse. It smelt acrid, but looked clean, and with a smirk, I appreciated the fully functioning toilet and hand-washing basin inside. Odd that it was separated from the main cabin, being plumbed in with running water. I figured it had probably been easier than plumbing in a new connection to the cabin. The log walls were unusually thick compared to the standard. The windows, at odds with the extra squat, appeared were smaller than the usual as well. It made for an odd contrast in the daylight, an ugly one. It looked more like a wooden bunker than a ranger's cabin. Returning to the bunkhouse to gather a few pieces I had brought in, it was brighter when I entered again. The sun was fully up now, and I needed to get a move on. It wouldn't be light forever, and I had to reach the waypoint between here and the lookout before dark, or I had been advised that I would never find it. It would have a hard time finding a good spot to bed down for the night again. It was a 2-dozen-mile hike to the lookout, and I never fancy hiking a marathon in one day. As much as the fire watch was a duty, and a responsibility I didn't take lightly, it was my escape from the city, and I planned to rest and enjoy the beauty about me when I could. I threw a look over the late-night arrival on my way past and saw a disheveled man, a little shy of average height. Like me, he had just traveled far to get here, and had bunked down without changing, still dressed in a flannel shirt and jeans, sleeping on his front. The touch of ginger in his brown hair and the freckled forearm suggested he had some Irish in him, but the Henry Lever action leaning against the foot of the bed
suggested that he was well acquainted with the Second Amendment. The boots tucked under the bed were odd, though. A swoosh on the side. Designer footwear, sure. But not the toughest of apparel for the terrain he would likely encounter in these parts. I gathered my stuff and headed to the truck. The same ranger from the night before was approaching from his own with a hearty wave and more sunny disposition than he had the night before. "Sorry about that last night, son," he had started, before explaining that there had been somebody missing the past few days. The search had been called off, a body had been found, and a hunter called in to deal with a man-eater. He saw the look of confusion on my face and elaborated that it was a bear responsible for the attack. There were no wolves in this park, and it was a toss between grizzlies and the mountain lions as to which was the culprit. He appeared to have lost a bet. "You met your travel buddy, I assume?" he asked me. "The guy's been called in to deal with the bear." His expression soured a little as he said that, as if the words had tasted bad. He spoke like a man unused to lying, and it was plain to see. I didn't push him for much more than that. I was more worried about organizing my first supply run, due in a handful of days, to set me up for a few weeks until the second followed up a month later. I was surprised to learn it would be Chopperton. I expected pack mules. I had seen the corral and stables as I had entered the park a few miles back. The ranger waved away my surprise. "We had the move with the times," he joked. "Or the drones and such would take our jobs next." The chopper was around to help the hunter. The bear, when it was dead, was to be lifted out for testing. Routine, I was assured. I was even more surprised to learn I would have company for the first leg of my journey. The disheveled Irishman had risen and, sitting on the tailgate of his far newer and more expensive truck than my own, changed into much more appropriate footwear while asking did I mind if he accompanied me to the waypoint. "We had to start in the same direction," he said, "and we were far less likely to shoot each other if we could see one another." A few miles in, the terrain eased out, or maybe we grew accustomed to the grade. The trees thinned out for a time, and the next distance was rocky with clumped bushes growing out of and around old scattered stumps left behind by some long-defunct industry. I took it all in and made some notes whenever we stopped. The hunter seemed to know the terrain. The further out we got, the more I felt a sinking feeling weight on me. Nerves were starting to sit in now that I could see just how remote my time here would be. Already, there wasn't a sign of any human habitation. My feelings sank a little further when I noticed my silent company was looking the opposite direction I was at every dip and rise we crested. He asked that we talk little until we stop, not to be rude, but so not to alert any nearby fauna to our presence too early. He explained that what we saw of the bird life was small to medium animals, and how many were around as we progressed was crucial to his investigation. Where I would look ahead and behind for waypoints and markers to note on my map, and gladly soaked in the views after an urban winter and spring, he looked at the ground, seeming to find tracks and traces of wildlife in the area everywhere. His expression was now set in a stony frown. "Here should be good for the night," he said, finally interrupting the sounds of nature around us. Birdsong and the low rush of trees and the steady breeze faded as my hearing was focused back to the immediate area. "Is it not a bit exposed here?" I questioned. "The coordinates that the rangers gave me are close. The campsite would be more sheltered." "Yeah," he agreed before countering with, "but remember I'm here to deal with a man-eater, and would you rather have a clear line of sight?" He demonstrated the vantage point we had here, and I relented without much fuss. It was safer to light a fire here in the craggy rock. I had expected him to argue against the fire, too, but he agreed. I was a lookout after all, he had joked. It was my area of expertise, and cooking meat was good to spark the curiosity of local predators. He smiled as he said it, but it sent shivers down my neck to think he was still thinking about his hunt. What had I gotten myself into? I couldn't help scanning the wide-open, bare rise. I don't know what I expected to see, but my imagination ran with it. I envisioned the incoming night, darkness falling the eyes in the distance, reflecting the flicker of firelight back at us. We passed the twilight hours swapping stories of hikes and areas we had a particular fondness for. As the night settled, I asked about his work and the dangers of his job. The guy had a dry wit and seemed good-humored, but quickly changed the subject after a few points about patience being key. Taking the cue, I joked that he must know some good campfire tales. He smirked and questioned. Do you really want to know now? Considering how long you'll be out here alone. Entertain me, I answered. Ever heard of a crawler? He said, looking over my shoulder. I couldn't help but slowly turn to follow his gaze. Like a cave crawler? I asked and thought about it. Ever seen The Descent? The movie about the women going spelunking and it all goes wrong? I know the one, he replied. It's not far off the mark. At least how they move and the blindness and reliance on sound rather than sight. Think a little taller, though. A little less human and more brittle looking. Much stronger, though. If those girls had been trapped with a real crawler, it would have been a chapter in a novel, not a feature-length movie. He was looking all around us as we talked, and he had pulled out a cigarette as he continued. Nightcrawler, cave crawler, they're all the same. Probably what spawned the idea of Slenderman and the Fresno Twins, really. They always put me in mind of skinwalkers and wendigos, I chipped in. They all spook me out, to be honest. He frowned at that before looking at me earnestly. That's a different story. At that, I decided to bed down for the night. It was still a far trek to the lookout in the morning, and the hunter's demeanor had changed as the night had lengthened. He sat, still as the dried husks of long dead trees scattered around us, turning this way and that every so often. Occasionally I heard the flare of a match, or the soft rustle of him readjusting to changing positions. Just as I had drifted into a deep slumber, unused to the exertion of the day's march after a quiet winter, I felt a hard quick to my side. What the hell? I exclaimed, quieter than I intended. Sleep had relaxed my throat, and it hadn't caught up with my violent spring to consciousness.
Shut up and get your gun out, he whispered, crouching beside me. We're being stalked.
What? He cut me off.
Just do it. Don't get up. Don't speak. Just listen and stay by the fire.
He sounded rushed. Not panicked, but not calm. It reminded me of the tough NCO in a war novel, who raged on the men in the downtime but pulled them through the thick of things in the end.
Stay by the fire, he repeated.
I didn't need reminding. My heart was in my throat, and the night air seemed to have grown heavier while I slept. I couldn't help shiver. I was cold and somehow sweaty, and I could feel my stomach turn acidic with worry.
I feel sick, I whispered.
That's them, the hunter replied, sitting back in the fog. It's infrasound, so low you can't hear it. It'll mess with your head, make you regret living and turn your stomach. Think of it like motion sickness. It'll pass or you'll just adjust or whatever. I laid there, fighting back the feeling of my stomach rising. My ears hurt. I felt a throb in my cheekbones as well. My sinus cavities reverberated, or so it felt. The feeling intensified as I laid there. My chest shook. It was as if a large subwoofer you could imagine laid on top of me, pounding out a low, steady, silent rumble. I turned sharply to the side, hearing footsteps, and realized my companion had gone. He was out of reach of the firelight. I was alone and afraid. I slowly reached over to my pack and pulled my Superhawk revolver from my holster on its side. It wasn't accurate, but it would stop a grizzly if it came to it. Only grizzlies couldn't utilize infrasound. I knew that. Slowly, I drew the piece, glinting in the near-dead firelight, and sat up. Glad I hadn't undressed, I shook off the sleeping bag and took up his position on the stump. Checked, the revolver was loaded, and tossed a few more sticks into the embers of the campfire. The scenario that I had played out earlier in the day, surrounded by darkness, the campfire's weak light greeting a small dancing circle of visibility. The rise and fall to either side of me hid its secrets. The barest outline of stumps and bushes I could make out against the black came into a life of their own. Every puff of wind rustled through made them move, and I'm pretty sure I started to see things. After a while, I noticed one bush in particular had a rather straight branch to one side. Straight as a die. The longer I looked, the more certain I was that it was the barrel of a rifle I was seeing. It was the hunter, nearly invisible, unmoving. Feeling as rigid as he was, I sat there and decided to face the opposite direction to cover our rear. I had to force myself, muscles uncooperative and instincts telling me to run. After an hour or so, I couldn't take it. The sick feeling hadn't passed. It had only worsened, and I had pins and needles radiating from my glutes down to my boots. I felt myself nodding and falling off to one side a few different times, and at one point, I nearly fell over and shook my head, trying to bring myself around to only see a figure to my front. Taller than me, thinner too, sickly looking. I rubbed my eyes to focus. I hadn't heard the hunter move. I must have really fallen asleep. Then it clicked. I hadn't heard the hunter move. Slowly, with one last rub, I dropped my hands from my eyes only to see a figure worse than anything I could imagine right in front of me. Like something from a horror movie. From the worst of nightmares. Something that belonged to the dark, quiet places where no man ever went. It was all teeth and no smiles. A wolf, assimilated into a man's body. It looked wet, brown-skinned or coarse fur, I couldn't tell. Longer, stringy and matted hairs hung from its shoulders where a lion's mane would. Knotted and dirty clumps stuck out from its forearms. Its ears would have been at home on a German shepherd, and were pinned back as it rushed towards me. A snarl erupted as it bared down on me. I fumbled for my revolver too late, and heard a bang so loud my ears rang, followed swiftly by another and again another. The creature toppled into me. Its snarl turned into a gurgle and I went down with it. Rancid foaming jaws brushed my face.
and I could barely breathe under its crushing weight. In the throes of its death, it still wanted me. Its jaws snapped, weaker and weaker, and jammed my forearm under its broken jaw as it inched closer. With one last bang, it pinched over and I was free enough to kick and scrabble to retreat to the fireside again. I brought my hands to my face and reeled with horror. What I had just seen shouldn't exist. It couldn't be real. The sticky hot slobber on my face disagreed, as did the gash on my forearm where the beast's claws had pierced the skin. The hunter walked over to the body and dug the barrel of the rifle hard into the hole where its eye had been before the killing shot went through it. There was no reaction other than me turning my hands and kneeling to vomit.
Sneaky turd,
the hunter appraised. He was impossible to track as he circled us. I said nothing.
We'll have to keep our guard up, he said. I couldn't tell if there was more than one.
Indeed, I had watched the perimeter of our camp as he had, often thinking I saw something move. The stories of the crawlers we had talked about earlier fueling my watchfulness, until the sleepiness had taken my edge away. I stayed upright until dawn and it couldn't come quick enough. The hunter made a call on the sat phone as the sun broke over the faraway peaks, and he deemed the watch no longer needed as much vigilance, though he pressed me to be wary.
We might be in the clear, he said after he finished the call. Not a hint of company since.
He walked over to the dead creature and gave it a kick, much better than I had received a few hours back. The impact echoed across the chill morning haze.
Go back to sleep, he said softly. I'll be up.
Screw that, I replied. I'm getting out of here.
In time, we both will be, he agreed. We need to clean you up first. Those cuts, whatever from claw or tooth, need cleaning. And you'll need a tetanus booster and some pills to stop the infection from taking hold. Trust me, I've experienced it.
I don't trust him. The scars on his neck still looked angry, and I'd seen his weathered, pockmarked hands.
Still want to hear about my job? He said in an amused tone.
I said nothing. Months have passed since, and I haven't left the city. The closest I have been to nature since is a local dog park. Funny as it seems, the first thing I did on my return to the city was get a big dog. They hear better, they smell further. They alert us to the presence of their overgrown cousin canids. I don't know what that creature was that night. I don't know what manner of bacteria or viruses it carried. All I know is that where its claws had pierced my skin, the wounds had festered. For weeks, I dealt with pus and bandage changes. It was touch and go for a while. My doctor even warned me I should make my peace with the possibility of losing the arm at its worst. As for the hunter, I never saw or heard of him again, and have no intention of finding him. That next morning, I hiked out with him and walked straight past the ranger station to my truck, slung my gear into the back and stuck it in drive. I didn't stop until I was at a filling station deep inside the limits of the nearest city. I had an odd call from my boss, disappointed that I had abandoned my post. He informed me I would no longer be able to take a watch in any post in the United States. I wasn't upset. I'm busy writing now. Horror novels come easy when your eye has been opened up to what is out there. What lurks in the quiet places, so isolated that no man should go there.